Iran's supreme leader praises security forces who cracked down on protesters. So what message is Ayatollah Ali Khamenei sending to Iran and the world? This is Inside Story. Welcome to the programme. I'm Sahil Rahman. No concessions, that's the thrust of a long and defiant speech by Iran's supreme leader. Ayatollah Ali Khamenei rejected protesters' demands for reforms, calling them rioters. He was addressing members of the Besij, a paramilitary group. Hundreds of demonstrators have been killed since the death of Mahsa Amini in police custody in September. The protests have turned into one of the biggest challenges to Iran's clerical leadership since the 1979 Islamic Revolution.
You saw in these recent matters that the persecuted people of Besij sacrificed themselves to prevent the nation from succumbing to the force of a group of killers, rebels, illiterate and enslaved people. They sacrificed themselves to prevent the cruelty of another.
Now, we'll get to our panel shortly, but first our correspondent Dorsad Jabari is in Tehran and sums up the key details in Ayatollah Ali Khamenei's speech.
The supreme leader, Ayatollah Ali Khamenei, at the age of 83, remained very much in the similar tone that he has had over the past 33 years since he's become the supreme leader of Iran. He said that there are still Western powers trying to bring down the Islamic Republic that had a revolution in 1979. He said that it is the role of the Besij members to make sure that the ideologies of the revolution continue. He also said that rioters, as he called them, will pay the price for their actions and will undoubtedly be dealt with. To let you know, there are now six people that have been handed down death sentences in Iran for their roles in the riot. The official charge is one that is waging war against the state. There are over 1,100 people in Tehran that are now facing trial and have been indicted. According to Human Rights Group, there are over 17,000 people who have been detained since the protests began. And the Supreme Leader also took the time to talk about the United States and the ongoing negotiations with that nuclear deal of 2015. He said that we cannot continue to make concessions. If we continue to give in to their demands, they will continue making them, and at one point they will want us to change our constitution and ultimately get rid of the Guardian Council, which is an assembly in Iran that deals with electing, vetting candidates for various electoral bodies in the country.
So let's bring in our guest for this edition of Inside Story from Tehran. Hassan Emadian is an assistant professor of Middle East Studies at the University of Tehran. From London, Roxanne Farman Famian. She is a lecturer on Middle East politics at Cambridge University. And from Springfield, Virginia, Doug Bando is a senior fellow at the Cato Institute. A warm welcome to all our guests. Hassan, can I come to you first in Tehran? A defiant speech which attacked outside forces for the problems that Iran is facing within its borders. Obviously, this speech was addressed to a very high-profile militia group who maintain law and order in certain parts of the country. What did you make of it?
Well, I think the address was to the Besij force, which is way more than a militia. It's a multidimensional voluntary force that is believed to be the backbone of the Islamic Republic. The supreme leader addressed the Besij, and I think the format was signaling the strength of the support base that the Islamic Republic enjoys. I think that was directed at the West, particularly the United States, who the supreme leader accused of trying to destabilize the country. Yeah. That message went also to the Besij forces and the Iranians in general, that destabilizing Iran and weakening it through engagement or through propaganda is part of U.S. and Western policy.
Okay.
So that, I think, is one main point that he made.
OK, we'll dig into this a little bit deeper. Roxanne, can I come to you in London? What was your general impression of what you heard as well? It's good to get these views from, you might say, across a global perspective.
Yes, I agree. Clearly, he was addressing a group that has been out on the streets and has lost several of their members. There's some 40 members of the Basij that apparently have lost their lives as part of the containment of the uprisings from their perspective. So I think it was a speech to give them hope and support, and clearly indicating that he thought they were doing a good job, because he was dismissing the protesters, calling them rioters, and finding them very irrelevant to the overall purpose of the Islamic Republic, which is to stand up to hegemony, a much larger picture. And that hegemony, of course, refers to the United States and Western capitalism and secular modernization. So it was an opportunity for him to likewise show how small and how irrelevant, as I said, the concerns of the protesters were compared to what the overall driving force of the Islamic Republic is, and the role of the Basij. Therefore, it was sort of a pep talk in some ways as well.
Yeah, well, we will dig into this. I just want to get Doug's opinion from Springfield. And of course, I bet the White House and State Department were listening quite intently, considering they've been following what's been going on in Iran, certainly over the last 2 months, very, very carefully.
Well, this reinforces the message that the government has been presenting, which is not so much to address the grievances of the protesters, but rather to argue that outside forces are at blame, and that this these demonstrations should be ignored or suppressed because they are a threat to Iran. And it ties into a well-established meme, which has a certain justification. That is, the United States, over the past decades, has intervened in Iran. So this is kind of pulling that history forward, especially to a younger audience, and is a way of trying to dismiss the troubles now and to play upon nationalism to support the regime.
OK, we'll talk about the tenuous relationship with the United States a little later. Hassan, can I just come back to you? And if we just focus on the recent upheaval, the death of Mahsa Amini in police custody, the issues of the headscarf and the way women dress, in a general and more wider approach, how much of what we've seen on the streets is about personal freedoms and civil liberties in Iran? And what's your impression of the way that the authorities have been trying to deal with that shift over the years, as we live in a more modern world and you can't stop those influences even penetrating into Iran?
Of course, there is much frustration in segments of Iranian society about the policies that have been, in place. But you see, there is also another portion that is supportive, very much supportive, that was addressed by the Supreme Leader. And I think I would differ with your American guest that he didn't voice any support for crackdown on opposition or rioters, as he called them. He basically talked about the way to deal with them, as in the term he uses, jihad at-Tabin, that is a struggle to promote the truth as opposed to Western propaganda igniting internal turmoil as a Western agenda. That's the way he framed it, and he tried to convey the message. Now, of course, there are frustrations within the Iranian society about not only the dress code, but also about corruption, mismanagement. He has repeatedly also spoke about them and talked about the need for reformation in many ways, and the need for the administration to deal with those grievances. But at the same time, he also distinguished those criticisms and protesters and protests from the rioters, as he called them, saying that these are things that basically ignited by the West and are a continuation of the policy to destabilize the country.
I'll just jump in there, Hassan, because I'm going to come to Roxanne. It's so easy, isn't it, to blame the West or infiltrators. At the end of the day, these are Iranians on Iranian soil, you know, complaining about whatever they want to complain about to the anger of the authorities. Roxanne, can I just come in here? Because for the Supreme Leader to talk publicly on television as well, even if it is to this besieged militia group, to actually take to the airwaves gives perhaps the impression that those at the top are nervous that the government and its authorities lower down the chain are unable to quell the anger of the public. And it's up to the Supreme Leader to basically, you might say, tighten the rope, beat them over the head, however you want to describe it, but to tell the public, hang on a second, we're still in charge and this is how it's going to happen. It's a message that then reverberates to various elements of the security services.
Yes, that's certainly one way of putting it, but I don't think my impression is that those at the top don't think they're in charge. There is as much a purpose in this to send out a message to the country, which is clearly an upheaval, to indicate that there is a problem and these need to be addressed in their view and according to the way that he expressed the solutions. So I think that we misunderstand Iran to think that those at the top are at all concerned about their position. There have not been strikes. There have not been large labor groups joining the protests, although they are widespread and have been quite continuous. The fact of the matter is that they are not as big as some of the previous protests, and the government itself does not feel as though they're responding incorrectly by exercising this level of repression, because they feel as though there are other groups. There have been very large sets of mourners that have turned out in response to the deaths of a number of those in authority. So they feel that's not being covered as much by the foreign media, certainly the Western media. And so I think we misunderstand the situation if we feel that this is at the moment giving a sense to the government that it's in a position of frailty. I don't get that impression.
And that's what we wanted to clarify, whether, you know, leaders or people in positions of power go onto the airwaves because they feel that their position is either being undermined by those within the regime or by the public at large. I mean, Doug Bandow, I mean, what's the general American impression when the Supreme Leader does take to the airwaves? Does the State Department, finely and minutely analyse every word and every element of a conversation that is being had between the Supreme Leader and his people?
Well, certainly the State Department and U.S. officials should pay close attention. I have never been impressed with U.S. policy towards Iran, which I think at times has shown more wishful thinking than realism. I think that the Supreme Leader is speaking, it makes an awful lot of sense. He's doing two things. One is speaking to the security services and lauding them for their efforts. And this is obviously very important for the regime. And second, what he wants to do is prevent the spread of these demonstrations. As mentioned, I don't think they have been broad enough to really threaten the survival of the ruling establishment. And what is critical then is to contain them and over time shrink them and hopefully, from the standpoint of the government, extinguish them. So to present a narrative that these demonstrations reflect outsiders and not patriotic Iranians is a very sensible message for the government to send. So what he's doing, I think any government under siege tries to do, which is buttress its support and also calm down the critics. And his speech strikes me as doing both of those.
Hassan, can I come to you in Tehran? I mean, what lessons have been learnt by the Iranian government over civil disturbances over the years? Because a whole range of issues have been raised in the past two decades, certainly from 2009 onwards, be it disputed elections, price rises, petrol availability, low wages, corruption within the government, water availability, and protests by farmers, bus drivers, students. I mean, a whole range of issues have come to the forefront, have been on the streets of Tehran and other major cities. How did these demonstrations and these disturbances vary from what we've already seen in the past?
Well, I think they have different causes, and they have been dealt with differently over time. I think what strikes me is the ability to reproduce legitimacy over time. I mean, in 2009, there were millions of people literally in the streets, but 3 years later, people were dancing for, you know, electing a new president and giving back the legitimacy that was felt as lost back to the political establishment here in Tehran. I think the Islamic Republic have learned over time how to basically come to terms with the different challenging voices raised within through some reforms and through some new instruments and ways to deal with them. This is part of the equation, but what's new, I think, in the debate is, and I think the Supreme Leader didn't make that much new points on this, but what came new was that the message to the United States and the West that these will not lead to concessions. I think this message was very strong. He came with different examples of previous Western influences trying to extract more concessions from Iran, saying that this will not happen. We did that back in 2015 with the JCPOA, and they basically reneged on their commitments. Now they want more. And he put it very clearly that he is not willing to allow that to happen again. So I think that message is the main point in the speech. And he basically talked about the internal rioters / protesters and the way to deal with them through spreading the truth that is facing the disinformation, misinformation that is poured in the scene from the West, as he puts it.
Yeah.
But I think the policy point of his speech was that no concessions, don't bank on this. We will not yield any new compromises to the West, particularly to the United States, that is backing this protesters against, according to the Supreme Leader.
Yeah, I mean, Roxanne, can I bring you in here? Because, I mean, any disturbances in Iran are often blamed on outside forces. We hear that time and time again coming out of Iran. Of course, let's talk about the JCPOA, that nuclear agreement that was supposed to halt Iran's nuclear development and the option was to lift sanctions and to help with the Iranian economy. That all fell apart under the Trump administration, for our viewers who are watching this. But the whole issue of concessions is something that Iran is not willing to bargain on. And as Hassan just said, it's sort of like a bit of a red line. But from your understanding, for the people you talk to inside and outside of Iran, behind closed doors, are there any sort of mutterings or murmurings that some sort of negotiation has to happen at a political level and concessions and leeway, give and take, have to occur in some shape or form, even if it's not around the JCPOA, but in a lead-up to the JCPOA being, you might say, reformed in some fashion?
Well, of course, they have been negotiating for over a year, ever since Biden, or 2 years after Biden came on to the presidency. So I think the negotiations had reached concessions on both sides. But I think in many ways, for Khamenei, the supreme leader, the risk is, of course, much greater because there is no guarantee the U.S. can give him that they won't withdraw again. And the greatest setback he could encounter would be to renegotiate and sign on the dotted line and then have the United States withdraw again, and in many ways, in his view, betray him a second time. That would truly mark his tenure as a failure. So I think there is a great sense that they've tried. I think the U.S. feels the same way, but that they have not succeeded. And so I agree. I see this as a quite a typical speech by Khamenei, but I do see it in three tiers, if you will. He's making a foreign policy statement about the JCPOA, which he called the JCPOA 2, which was quite interesting. And that kind of challenge that the United States represents is the larger picture that that those in the street should understand is really the goal of Iran, and they're not helping it.
No,
That they need to either understand or be put down.
Yeah, sorry to have interrupted there. I'm glad you finished your sentence. Doug, can I come to you? Obviously, a very difficult position for the US. As Roxanne said, you know, you have different administrations coming into power, taking away or cancelling agreements, you know, as we've seen between Trump and over to the Biden administration. Because, of course, in these negotiations, we talk about influence. We talk about, you know, Iran's position in the world and in the Middle East. And, of course, Iran has those influences in Lebanon, Yemen, Iraq, and while the America and its allies would like to curtail that, the JCPOA was a way of perhaps bringing Iran into line, for want of a better word. These issues are very difficult to balance for the US right now, especially when administrations renege on an agreement. And one can understand Tehran's position about why they would want to shake hands at any level with the West and with the US when these sorts of things are happening.
Well, there was frustration with the JCPOA, even under the Obama administration, because many companies were reluctant to go to Iran even after the JCPOA. So Iran did not get as much of an economic boost that it was hoping for. And of course, the Trump administration was simply a disaster when it came to relations with Iran. Apparently, President Trump really thought that he could effectively force the surrender of Iran on its foreign policy. And of course, that didn't happen. And the Biden administration came in and appeared that it wanted to essentially use what it thought was leverage created by the sanctions from Trump to force negotiation on other issues. And of course, other issues, you know, certainly should be discussed, but the only way to win concessions from Iran would have been for the United States to make corresponding concessions. And that didn't seem to be really part of the process. So it's a great disappointment where we've ended up, because the nuclear issue itself is very volatile. It brings on the worst of hawks within the U.S. foreign policy establishment. It also brings in the issue of Israel and how it might respond. And then on top of that, of course, you know, what we see is trying to move forward on any other issues to be much more difficult without a resolution of the nuclear issue.
Okay, well, coming to the end of our program, I'd like to give the final thought to Hassan in Tehran about where you think this will all end. Can these protests come to an end naturally? Will they die out naturally? Will they continue? What's your general sense of what you see and hear in Iran right now?
Well, recently we've seen them, decreasing in the streets and in the universities where I teach, basically. So I think, when the process is lengthy and there is no leadership leading protesters, and they turn to incorporate rioters, the end is quite clear, taking into account previous experiences. They will die down eventually because the society will not back insecurity coming with the rioters in the streets. Initially, they were not that violent, but over time, they took a violent path that rendered them away and distant from the society. And I think this actually led to them shrinking over time. And I think the political system doesn't need to do much about them to distinguish them or push them away from the major society that is not there in the streets now.
Okay, well, we'll see what does happen, certainly, in the coming weeks. For the moment, we have to end it there, I'm afraid. But I'd like to thank Hassan Ahmadian in Tehran, Roxanne Farman-Famian in London, and Doug Bandow in Springfield. Thank you all for joining me on this edition of Inside Story, and thank you for watching as well. You can see the programme again anytime by visiting our website at aljazeera.com, and for further discussion, go to our Facebook page. That's facebook.com/AJInsideStory. You can also join the conversation on Twitter. Our handle there is at AJInsideStory. From me, Sahil Rahman, and the entire team here in Doha, thank you very much for your time and your company.